Welcome to Making Waves.
Welcome to Making Waves.
Fresh ideas and freshwater science.
Fresh ideas and freshwater science and
why
they matter
to you.
Making Waves.
Making Waves is brought to you.
Making Waves is brought to you with support from the Society for Freshwater Science.
Hi, everyone. Welcome to Making Waves. My name is Susan Washko, and I'm here with my co-host, Eric Moody, to talk a little bit about field safety. In episode 44, we demonstrated the importance of field experiences for undergraduate students. However, students in the field, they experience what they're going through in different ways due to their different identities. So field safety is increasingly being discussed for improving diversity, equity, and inclusion in science. And we wanted to dedicate an episode specifically to this type of information because the aquatic sciences can be especially perilous because being near water can be dangerous. So students might not know how to swim. They might not be able to judge the depth or the water velocity or be able to tell if the water quality is questionable. They might not have the gear to be comfortable while being wet, or students working in rural or urban settings could face potentially threatening encounters with other people. And all of these different dangers can be exacerbated in the field, being a woman, a person of color, someone who's identifying as LGBTQ. So today we would like to chat with some experts to learn about what instructors, mentors, and supervisors need to consider before bringing students to aquatic field sites or to the field in general. So today we have Jabari Jones and Lauren Diaz. And would you mind introducing yourselves for our audience?
Sure. My name is Lauren Diaz. I'm currently a PhD student at Oregon State, and I consider myself a general freshwater ecologist. I mostly work on critters like amphibians and fish.
I'm Jabari Jones, a PhD candidate at the University of Minnesota, studying hydrology and geomorphology. And I'm generally interested in how rivers change over time.
All right. Thanks, Lauren and Jabari. This is Eric Moody talking now. So I'm going to start us off with our first question, which is, generally speaking, what are some of the hazards that you prepare for if you're taking students or your employees or people you supervise out into the field to do field work in aquatic environments?
The three big things that I would think of are the weather, the experience level of the student or employee, and also maybe the surrounding cultural landscape and how comfortable that person is with those landscapes. In terms of weather, especially when it comes to like clothing and gear, it's really easy for people who have grown up being outdoors to know exactly what to do. It's kind of like second nature. But I mean, a lot of people of color, a lot of people coming from immigrant communities don't really spend that much time in nature, not because there's no intrinsic interest, but a lot of it is just, it's harder to do. It's kind of expensive. So we may not know like, oh, you shouldn't really wear cotton if it's going to be cold and wet, or how many layers to bring if it's going to be cold. And I know that I've been in situations where I was not prepared and nobody told me. So I didn't know, and I was freezing and extremely uncomfortable. And it's hard to do a good job, you know, if you're just extremely uncomfortable. So it's best to just like assume nobody knows anything, I guess, and really lay it out and just make sure that everybody knows exactly what they're getting themselves into. And if people don't have the appropriate gear, like as a company, as an agency, provide it. Like, don't assume that they have the right jackets. Don't assume that they have the right kind of like sun protective equipment. Just, you know, it should not be on them to purchase it. So that's my two cents on that.
Yeah, I think in addition to those things, I try to think about every single thing that field experience is going to entail, starting from, you know, how are we going to get there? To when we come back, what is each of the activities going to look like? So if we're driving to a field site, how many cars are we taking? Does everybody know directions to get there? What happens if their phone dies while they're driving? You know, do you need to print out a printed set of directions to make sure that people can get there on time? And sort of being that detail oriented when thinking about each step. So if we're working in a river, you know, what's the water level going to be? How tall are the students, right? If they're wearing waders and they're short, there's more risk that their waders are going to overtop versus somebody who's 7.5 feet tall, right? All of those kinds of things are factors that you want to think about and be as detailed as possible and sort of listing each of the potential risks or dangers or pitfalls that you could run into.
also, I think it's really important to not send people out alone if at all possible. A lot of the time we work in really remote areas. We may not have self-service if you're out there alone, which I've had a truck break down like super far down Forest Road with no service. And it's a bit stressful and a bit scary. So I think that's really important. And just having like a workplace culture of empathy and respect rather than competition, so that people feel okay speaking out when they're uncomfortable, so that they feel okay speaking out when they don't know something, don't know what they're supposed to do. I think that also keeps people really safe.
I know you just mentioned some strategies within those contexts, but are there any really specific strategies that you use to make fieldwork safe for all the people that are involved?
I think for me, you know, thinking about each detail helps you to think about strategies for keeping things safe. So if you list out each of those potential risks, then you think about what a solution or what a plan that you need to have ahead of time would be. So if, you know, it's a rendezvous at a field site where everybody's driving separately, you know, having everyone, making sure that everyone has contact information so that if they are running late or if their car breaks down, they know who to call. Lauren already mentioned providing gear and making that available for people who might not have it. And I think being really explicit upfront about what the experience is going to entail can help everyone to plan for that experience. And then, as Lauren also mentioned, having a culture where people feel comfortable saying, oh, I don't have those things, can they be provided for me, is a way to ensure that people feel comfortable getting what they need so that they can be safe.
Yeah, and there's maybe some specific concrete things like contact landowners, like even if you're not going to be on their property. I have a small anecdote where a lab mate of mine had a gun pointed at him, even though he was technically on public land, but the neighbors did not perceive it as such. So that's something that could be done, having pre-fieldwork meetings to go over any potential concerns, and even like active bystander training that everybody takes part in, so that when you're out in a team and something seems to be going wrong and, you know, you have kind of a sketchy encounter, like how can we help each other out? How can we safely navigate the situation?
Yeah, I think there are other trainings that could be useful as well, like first aid, you know, ensuring that at least somebody has wilderness first aid training in case someone gets hurt in the field. You know, if you're going to be working in fast moving water bodies, maybe someone on the team needs to take a swift water rescue course, things like that.
Lauren, you kind of mentioned this, that people who have spent a lot of time outdoors, you know, they're used to being outdoors, feeling comfortable in that scenario, kind of know how to prepare and know what hazards they might face. But people may have a harder time empathizing with how other people may feel in that setting. And so I was wondering if you could talk a little bit about how some of the hazards and strategies you discussed are particularly relevant to people of color, women, and or queer scientists working in the field.
Yeah, I think especially when you are a, you know, white or cishet or, you know, a man, there are things that you don't even consider to be a risk because you never think about them. And, you know, this goes back to having a workplace culture of empathy and respect where you want people to feel comfortable. You want them to feel safe coming to you if they feel uncomfortable with something. And I mean, I'm Cuban American, but I'm really white passing, so that keeps me safe. I'm queer, but I am also passing, so that keeps me safe. And I can't really speak to my experience in those situations. But definitely as a woman, there's kind of like a always looming cloud of violence that kind of follows us everywhere we go. And it's something that men don't think about. They don't think about whether they're going to be safe if they, you know, step out of the truck for 5 seconds in a rural area. But, you know, I've had some situations where I'm going out into really remote areas and I would see a lot of hunters and I was by myself. And every time I would see one, I would be like, wow, I hope this man with a gun chooses to not hurt me. And in those situations, it's best not to be alone. That would help a lot. And yeah, just make sure that you have conversations with people about what they're willing to do, what they're comfortable with. I had a friend during my master's, she was trans and she was working in a remote area in the South. And had to live in this kind of small town and do her life there and get groceries, and was actively harassed multiple times, just like while, you know, existing in the town. It wasn't really something that was understood by her advisors very much. And it ended up that she quit her whole program because of it. So we're losing out on valuable scientists, and it doesn't need to be that way. We can like we as humans matter as well as the data we're trying to collect.
Yeah, I've had some experiences. So I'm African American, and I've worked in lots of rural places around the U.S., some in the rural South, where some of the field sites we went to, we would drive by, you know, 20 Confederate flags on the way to our field site. And I never felt like, oh no, somebody's going to run out of this house with a gun and attack me. But even that sort of baseline level of anxiety about, I'm going to a place where people that look like me are not welcome or historically have not been welcomed, is sort of always sitting in the back of your mind when you're working in those kinds of spaces. And it's difficult to know from sort of a supervisory position exactly what you could do to sort of alleviate that. And I think Lauren was talking about this a little bit, that, you know, thinking that through ahead of time and having those conversations ahead of time to say, are you comfortable going to this place? You know, knowing what the history has been there, knowing that there's a potential for discomfort or even danger outright. Are you comfortable doing that work? Can we send someone with you? Would it be best if we sent someone with you? Are the kinds of conversations that you could have ahead of time to alleviate some of that stress, I think.
Yeah, and I'll add to that it's a hard thing to deal with as a supervisor, as a professor, because these problems are not something we can solve. You know, they're societal problems. So, and you know, at the end of the day, like the work a lot of time just needs to get done, and you're not going to hire, you know, white men because it's easier to send them out in the field versus hiring women and people of color. So there's not a clear answer, I guess, but also just like not avoiding these topics at work. I think a lot of people feel uncomfortable talking about these things if they've been around for a while. Society has changed so much in the last like 10, 15 years that a lot of people who have been in these positions for decades, this is all very kind of like new and overwhelming to have these kinds of not business-like conversations at work that deal with personal things, but it's just necessary.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's important to note, you know, the point of those stories that you share with us shouldn't be that like transgender or Black people shouldn't go into aquatic ecology. It's that this is on us as mentors or, you know, instructors or supervisors to make a safe environment for everyone to work in.
Yeah. I think one other thing that I think of as a strategy to potentially do that is to work with any partners you're working with early on and to tell them, hey, these are the students that we have coming to the field. So say you're going to, you know, the National Forest or a National Forest to do field work, contacting the rangers in the National Forest ahead of time and saying, we're bringing these students into the field for these dates. You know, if we run into any trouble, who in your office could we contact, you know, to come out and help us if there were a situation, would be kind of a concrete action you could take ahead of time to catch some of those problems.
Thanks so much for sharing those stories and tips. I think it's really, really helpful to hear, especially for people who want to lead people in the field. I think that's really important. So you all still do field work despite the hazards. Why is it worth it to you?
I think ultimately, you know, there's data that needs to be collected. If there is a particular place that you're interested in and you need to know the sediment transport rate, the only way you're going to get it is to go there and measure sediment transport in the river. For certain questions, you don't have a choice about whether or not you go to the field. But for me personally, I also love doing field work, right? It's what drew me into the science in the first place, was that I got to go and camp in, you know, beautiful, spectacular places and to ask and investigate interesting questions about the earth and about these particular places and to understand their dynamics and what makes them interesting. Yeah, I think for me, those are the two reasons that I do it.
Yeah, along similar lines. I mean, most of us get into this field because we love field work. You know, I didn't really grow up going outside too much. I come from a big city. And so going to college and, you know, majoring in wildlife, my field trips were pretty much my first experience with like real nature. Like I didn't camp till I was like 20. And I was just like so blown away by the fact that there's like whole jobs where you could like go and catch animals. And that like totally made me fall in love. And I just keep falling more in love the more field work I do. So that makes it worth it. And at the end of the day, maybe I don't actively think of the safety concerns most of the time, even though they're always kind of in the back of your mind sometimes. They have never really stopped me. But I have like had a second thought sometimes of like, oh, maybe I should go tomorrow instead of going today because if the weather's better, because I can get someone to come with me or something like that. But yeah, the work needs to get done. We're all here because we believe in the science and we want to do something for these systems that we love. The more you experience being out in the field, the more you also understand the system and the greater insights you can have.
And I think from a teaching perspective, you know, there's that potential to inspire students, right, that Lauren was just talking about, that all of a sudden you get a student in your classroom and you tell them, you know, there's this field, this career out there where you get to go outside and chomp around in rivers for a living. And that has the potential to, you know, lead somebody down a path where that's what they want to do. And then you're also imparting skills for them. You know, if they're going into that career path, they have to learn how to do those things. And so I think taking students into the field is critical in that way.
Well, thank you for sharing all of your experiences and perspectives in particular inspiring us way. You know, fieldwork is still so important and can be so enjoyable. I wanted to just, you know, close by giving you the opportunity to share any other final thoughts you have about this topic that may not have come up in any of the questions that we asked.
I will just reiterate that communication is honestly the key to all of this, and acceptance of those around you. If people feel like they can be themselves and they feel like they can voice how they feel about things, everyone is going to be happier, everyone's going to be more productive, and everyone's going to be safer.
Make sure that everyone has food. I did some field work earlier this summer where we like skipped lunch one day because we were trying to really finish getting some data. It made me very cranky.
And water.
Thanks again. To recap our discussion, you just heard from Lauren Diaz, a PhD student at Oregon State University, and Jabari Jones, a PhD student at the University of Minnesota, about the importance of keeping everyone safe when you're taking students, employees, or yourself out into the field. So the next time you're going out in the field to do field work, hopefully with someone else, and especially if that person is someone you're responsible for, someone you're supervising, please think about not only what you need to do to keep yourself safe, but what you need to do to keep those other people safe as well. That's all this week for Making Waves. Hope to see you again next time.
You've been listening to the Making Waves podcast.
For
more info, please
visit us online
at the Society for Freshwater Science webpage.
Tune in next time for another fresh idea in freshwater science.